Ludicrous, considering that most of them changed partners once they were out on the streets anyway. Still, there were often heated arguments about assignments. Much posturing was to be found, names were called. Occasionally fists were employed. In fact, the only thing that the men of the sex crimes unit could agree upon, as far as assignments were concerned, was that none of them wanted to be stuck with women. At least, not unless they were pretty. The problem trickled down to other divisions as well. Every morning, Commissioner Reginald Eves' daily bulletin was read at the beginning of roll call. Reggie was always transferring people around to fill whatever federal quota was being forced down their throats that day. No officer knew where he or she would land when they showed up for work. It could be the middle of Perry Homes, or the living hell that was the Atlanta airport. Just last year, a woman had been assigned to SWAT for a week, which would have been a disaster if she'd actually had to do anything. Amanda had always been on day watch, probably because her father wanted it that way. No one seemed to notice or care that she continued with the schedule even as Duke sued the city. Day watch, the easiest rotation, was from 8 to 4. Evening watch was 4 to midnight, and morning watch, which was the most dangerous, ran from midnight until 8 in the morning. The patrol officers worked roughly the same schedules as the detectives and plainclothes divisions, less an hour on either side, which followed the old 7-3-11 railroad schedule. The thinking was that one would hand over to the other. This seldom happened. Most of the time when Amanda got into work, she'd run into a couple of suspects sporting black eyes or bloody bandages on their heads. They were generally handcuffed to the benches by the front door, and no one could say exactly how they'd gotten there or with what they'd been charged. Depending on how a uniformed officer's arrests were looking that month, some of the prisoners were freed, then immediately arrested again for loitering. As with most Zone headquarters, Zone 1 was housed in a dilapidated storefront that looked like the sort of place the police should be raiding, not milling around inside of, drinking coffee and trading war stories about yesterday's arrests. Located behind the Plaza Pharmacy and a theater specializing in pornographic films, the Zone headquarters had been unceremoniously relocated to this location when it was discovered the previous HQ was located directly above a sinkhole. The Atlanta Constitution had had a field day with that one. There were only 3 rooms in the building. The largest was the squad room, which had the sergeant's office cordoned off by a glass partition. The captain's office was far nicer, meaning that the windows actually opened and closed. Before the 4th of July holiday, someone had broken the plate glass window in front of the squad room in order to let in fresh air. No one had bothered to fix it, probably because they knew it would just be broken again. The third room was the toilet, but it was shared, and it had been ensured that no woman would ever be able to sit down on the seat. The one time Amanda had walked into the bathroom, she'd ended up dry heaving behind the Plaza Theater while the grunts and moans of Winnie Bango reverberated through the cinderblock wall. "Morning, ma'am," one of the patrolmen tipped his hat as Amanda walked by. She nodded in return, making her way past a cluster of familiar white Atlanta police cruisers as she headed for the squad entrance. The stench of winos permeated the air, though the benches were absent any handcuffed vagrants. A veil of cigarette smoke hugged the stained drop ceiling. Every surface had a layer of dust, even the long cafeteria-style tables set out in crooked lines across the room. The podium in front was empty. Amanda looked at the clock. She had 10 minutes to spare before morning roll call. Vanessa Livingston was sitting in the back of the squad room going over paperwork. She was wearing gray slacks and the same ugly black men's shoes they'd all been forced to wear when they were in uniform. Her light blue shirt was short-sleeved, and she wore her dark hair in a page boy that curved out widely at the sides. Amanda had patrolled with Vanessa a few times back when they were both in uniform. She was a reliable partner, but she could be a little hippy-dippy, and there were rumors going around that she was trim, code for women who made themselves sexually available to police officers. Amanda didn't have a choice but to sit by her. As usual, the squad room was divided into four quadrants. White and black, either side. Women in back, men in the front. Amanda kept her gaze straight ahead as she walked through a cluster of uniformed men. They all waited until the last minute to let her pass. A group in the corner were working deadbolt locks. There were daily competitions to see who could pick a lock the fastest. A few officers were trading hot-loaded ammunition. Over the last 2 years, 14 Atlanta cops had been shot dead. A faster bullet in your gun was not a bad idea. Amanda dropped her purse onto the table as she sat down. How are you?
I'm very well. Vanessa's voice was cheerful, as usual. I lucked up with Inspection Division this morning.
They've already left?
Vanessa nodded. Amanda immediately unbuttoned her cuffs and rolled up her sleeves. The fresh air on her arms was almost enough to make her swoon.
Amanda asked, It wasn't Geary?
There was no way Sergeant Mike Geary would have given Vanessa a pass. He didn't think women should be on the job, and he had the power to do something about it. For some reason, he particularly had it in for Amanda. She was one more citation away from a day-long suspension. She couldn't even think what she'd do for rent if that happened.
Geary's out today.
Vanessa stacked her reports together.
It was Sandra Phillips, the black chick, keeps her head shaved like a man.
I have a class with her, Amanda said.
Most everyone she knew was taking night courses at Georgia State. The federal government paid tuition, and the city was forced to bump up your pay if you got a degree. This time next year, Amanda would be pulling in almost $12,000.
Vanessa asked, You have a good fourth?
I took a few extra shifts,
Amanda admitted. She'd volunteered for no other reason than she couldn't face a whole day of her father rehashing every story he'd read in the newspapers. Thank goodness the paper only came twice a day, or he'd never sleep.
What about you?
Drank so much I crashed my car into a telephone pole.
Is the car all right?
Fender smashed, but it still drives.
Vanessa made her voice low.
You heard about Oglethorpe?
Lars Oglethorpe was one of Duke's friends. They'd both been fired the same day.
What about him?
State Supreme Court ruled in his favor. Full back pay and benefits. Reinstated rank. He's been assigned to his old uniform squad. I bet Reggie had a cow when he heard.
Amanda didn't have time to answer. There was a series of masculine cheers as Rick Landry and Butch Bonney walked into the squad. As usual, the homicide detectives were up against the clock. Roll call was scheduled to start in 2 minutes. Amanda reached into her purse and pulled out a stack of typed reports.
You're a doll.
Butch took the reports and tossed his notebook on the table in front of Amanda.
Hope you can read it.
She looked at his scrawl across the first page and frowned.
I swear sometimes you make this illegible on purpose. Give me a call, sweetheart, day or night.
He gave her a wink as he followed Landry to the front of the room.
Night's preferable.
There were chuckles around the room, which Amanda pretended to ignore as she flipped through Butch's notes. The words got easier to read as she paged along. Butch and Rick worked homicide division. There was a job Amanda never wanted. Because she typed Butch's reports, she couldn't help but absorb some of the details. They had to tell relatives that their family members were murdered. They had to look at dead people and watch autopsies. Just reading about these things turned Amanda's stomach. There really were some jobs that only men could do.
Vanessa asked, Did you hear we've got a new sergeant?
Amanda waited expectantly.
He's one of Reggie's boys.
Amanda suppressed a groan. One of Reginald Eve's seemingly better ideas was to finally institute a written exam for promotions. Amanda had actually been foolish enough to believe she had a chance. When none of the black officers could pass the written exam, Eves had thrown out the results and instituted an oral exam. Predictably, very few white officers were able to pass the orals. None of them had been women.
Vanessa said, I hear he's from up north. Sounds like Bill Cosby.
They both turned around, trying to see into the sergeant's office. There were filing cabinets stacked in front of the glass partition. The door was open. but all Amanda could see was another filing cabinet and the edge of a wooden desk. A glass ashtray was on the leather blotter. A black hand reached over and tapped a cigarette against the glass. The fingers were slim, almost delicate. The nails were trimmed in a straight, blunt line. Amanda turned back around. She pretended to read Butch's notes, but her mind wouldn't focus. Maybe it was the heat. Or maybe it was because she was sitting next to a minor bird. Vanessa said, "I wonder where Evelyn is." Amanda shrugged, still staring at the notes. "I can't believe she came back." Vanessa continued, "She's got to be tripping." Despite her best intentions, Amanda felt herself getting sucked back in. It's been almost 2 years, she realized. Duke had been off the job 11 months. Evelyn had left to have her baby the year before that. The woman had just made plainclothes division. Everyone assumed that was the end of her working life. Vanessa said, "If I had a husband and a kid, no way I'd show up at this dump every day. It'd be good night, John boy, for me." Maybe she has to. Amanda kept her voice low so no one could hear her gossiping. For the money. "Her husband makes plenty of dough. He sold insurance to half the force." Vanessa snorted a laugh. "That's probably the only reason she came back, to help him sell policies." Her teasing tone dropped. "You really should talk to him, though. He's got cheaper rates than Benowitz. Plus, you wouldn't be giving your money to a Jew." "I'll ask Evelyn," Amanda said, though she liked Nathan Benowitz. Her Plymouth belonged to the city, but they all had to pay for their own car insurance. Benowitz had always been nice to Amanda. "Shh," Vanessa hushed, though Amanda hadn't said anything. "He's coming." The assembled officers quieted down as the new sergeant walked into the room. He was wearing their winter colors, dark navy pants, and a matching long-sleeved shirt. He was very light-skinned. He kept his hair shaved in a square, military cut. Unlike everyone else, there was no visible sweat on the man's brow. Amanda watched as he navigated the invisible line down the center of the squad, where none of the tables touched. The new sergeant looked to be around 30 years old. He was fit and lean. His body more like a teenager's than a grown man's. But he still had to turn sideways to pass between the tables. Amanda noticed that the gap was tighter than usual. Pettiness was generally the only thing that compelled them all to work together. The black cops would hate the new man because he was from the north. The whites would hate him because he was one of Reggie's boys. He stacked his papers against the podium, cleared his throat, and said in a surprisingly deep baritone, "I'm Sergeant Luther Hodge." He glanced around the room as if he expected someone to challenge him. When no one spoke, he continued, "I'll read the daily briefing before roll call, since there are a considerable number of transfers." A groan went around the room, but all Amanda could think was how refreshing it was that someone had actually figured out it was better to announce transfers before taking roll. Hodge read through the names. Vanessa was right that he sounded like Bill Cosby. He spoke carefully, if not slowly. Every word was fully enunciated. The uniformed men in the front rows stared openly, as if they were watching a dog walk on its hind legs. Black or white, they were all straight off the farm or freshly discharged from military service. The majority of them spoke in the same heavy dialect that Amanda's country cousins used. She couldn't help staring at Hodge herself. He finished reading out the lengthy transfers, then cleared his throat again. "Roll will be called in teams. Some of you will have to wait for your partners to come from other divisions. Please check with me to make certain that your partner is accounted for before you go out into the streets." As if on cue, Evelyn Mitchell rushed into the squad room, glancing around with an almost panicked look in her eyes. Amanda was still in uniform when Evelyn got promoted to sex crimes, but the few times she'd seen her, the woman was always stylishly dressed. Today, she was carrying a large suede purse with an Indian pattern on the front and tassels hanging down from the wide gusset. She wore a navy skirt with a yellow blouse. Her blonde hair was cut to shoulder length and very flattering, reminiscent of the style worn by Angie Dickinson. Obviously, Amanda wasn't the only one thinking this.
Butch Bonney called out, "Hey, Pepper Anderson, you can cuff me anytime."
The men laughed in unison. "I'm sorry I'm late," Evelyn told the new sergeant. "It won't happen again." She spied Amanda and Vanessa and headed toward the back table. Her heels made a clicking sound that echoed through the space. Hodge stopped her.
"I didn't catch your name, detective."
His words seemed to suck all the air from the room. Heads swiveled around to Evelyn, who stood frozen beside Amanda. The dread coming off of her was as palpable as the heat.
Hodge cleared his throat again. "Am I missing something, officer? I assume you're a detective since you're not in a patrolman's uniform."
Evelyn opened her mouth, but it was Rick Landry who answered.
"She's plainclothes, not detective,"
Hodge persisted.
"I'm not sure I understand the difference."
Landry jabbed his thumb toward the back of the room. The cigarette in his mouth bobbed as he spoke.
"Well, you see those two tits under her shirt?"
The room erupted in laughter. Evelyn clutched her purse to her chest, but she laughed along with them. Amanda laughed too. The sound rattled in her throat like a drain. Hodge waited for the chatter to die down. He asked Evelyn,
"What's your name, officer?"
"Mitchell," she provided, sinking down into the chair beside Amanda. "Mrs. Evelyn Mitchell."
"I suggest you avoid tardiness in the future, Mrs. Mitchell."
He looked down at the roll sheet and checked off her name.
"You'll be with Miss Livingston today."
He went to the next name.
"Miss Wagner. We'll put you with Detective Peterson, who'll be coming from..."
Someone gave a loud wolf whistle. Hodge talked over it.
"From Zone 2.
Evelyn turned to Amanda and rolled her eyes. Kyle Peterson was a mess. When he wasn't trying to put his hand up your skirt, he was sleeping one off in the back of the car. Vanessa leaned over and whispered to Evelyn,
"I like your new cut. It's very chic."
"Thanks." She pulled at the back of her hair as if she wished she could make it longer. She asked Amanda, "Did you hear Oglethorpe got reinstated?"
"They gave him his old squad back," Vanessa supplied. "I wonder what that means for us."
"Probably nothing at all," Evelyn murmured. They all turned their attention back to the front of the room. There was a white man standing on the periphery, just inside the open doorway. He was around Amanda's age and wearing a sharp, powder blue, three-piece suit. His sandy blonde hair was long in the back, his sideburns untrimmed. His arms were crossed impatiently over his chest, the round paunch of his stomach stuck out below.
"Brass?" Vanessa guessed.
Evelyn shook her head. "Too well-dressed."
"Lawyer,"
Amanda told them. She'd been to the downtown office of her father's lawyer enough times to know what they looked like. The nice suit was a giveaway, but the arrogant tilt to his chin was the only clue she needed.
"Detectives Landry and..."
Luther Hodge seemed to realize no one was paying attention to him anymore. He looked up from the roll sheet and stared at the visitor for a few seconds before saying,
"Mr. Treadwell, we can talk in my office,"
he told the squad.
"I'll be a few minutes. If someone could take over..." Butch jumped up. "I'll handle it." "Thank you, detective."
Hodge seemed to miss the wary expressions around the room. Putting Butch in charge of the schedule was like putting a fox in charge of the henhouse. He would change the assignments into his own version of the dating game. Hodge made his way back to the rear of the room, angling his lanky frame through the narrow dividing line. The lawyer, Treadwell, followed along the outside wall. He lit a cigarette as he walked into the office and shut the door. Evelyn asked,
"Wonder what that's about?"
"Well, never mind them," Vanessa said. "Why on earth did you come back?"
"I like it here."
Vanessa pulled a face.
"Come on, kid, the truth."
"The truth is really boring. Let's wait to see what the rumors say." Evelyn smiled, then unzipped her purse and searched around inside. Vanessa looked to Amanda for an explanation, but she could only shake her head.
Yes, sir,
someone said. Amanda saw a group of black patrolmen had taken it upon themselves to narrate the goings-on in Hodge's office.
Amanda glanced at Evelyn, then Vanessa. They all turned around for the full effect. Behind the glass partition, Treadwell's mouth moved, and one of the black cops said in a pompous voice,
"Now see here, boy, my taxes pay your salary."
Amanda stifled a laugh. She heard the same phrase almost every day, as if Amanda's taxes didn't pay just as much of her salary as the next person's. Hodge was looking down at his desk. There was a meekness to the slump in his shoulders as his mouth moved.
"Yes, sir,"
the first cop supplied.
"I's gonna look into it for you, sir. Yes, indeed I do."
Treadwell jabbed a finger at Hodge. The second cop grumbled.
"This city is a mess, I say. What's the world coming to? The monkeys are running the zoo."
Hodge nodded, his eyes still trained downward. The first cop offered,
"Yes, sir, it sure do be a mess. Can't even eat my comb bread without hearing about them poor white women what's getting harassed by Negro men."
Amanda chewed her bottom lip. There were a few nervous titters. Treadwell's hand dropped. The second cop said,
"I say, you damn niggas, act like you own the place."
No one laughed at that. Not even the black officers. The joke had gone too far. When Treadwell threw open the office door and stormed out, the room remained stiflingly silent. Luther Hodge was a study in contained fury as he walked to the open door. He pointed at Evelyn.
"You,"
his finger jabbed in Amanda and Vanessa's general direction.
"And you, in my office."
Vanessa stiffened in her chair. Amanda put her hand to her chest.
"Me, or..."
"Do you women understand orders? In my office," he told Butch. "Continue roll call, Detective Bonnie. I shouldn't have to tell you twice."
Evelyn clutched her purse to her chest as she stood. The back of Amanda's legs felt cool as she rose to follow. She turned to Vanessa, who looked both guilty and enormously relieved. Evelyn was standing in front of Hodge's desk when Amanda joined her. He sat in his chair and started writing on a piece of paper. Amanda turned to shut the door, but Hodge said,
"Leave it open."
If Amanda thought she'd been sweating before, it was nothing compared with how she felt now. Evelyn was obviously feeling it, too. She nervously pulled at the back of her hair. The thin silver of her wedding ring caught the light from the overhead fluorescence. Butch Bonney's dull monotone called out team assignments in the other room. Amanda knew that even with the door closed, Luther Hodge had heard the black officers making fun of him. Hodge put down his pen. He sat back in his chair and looked at first Evelyn, then Amanda.
"You two are on the sex crimes unit."
They both nodded, though he hadn't asked a question.
"There's been a Signal 49 reported at this address."
A rape. Hodge held out the sheet of paper. There was a moment's hesitation before Evelyn took it. She looked down at the page. "This is in Techwood, the ghetto."
"That's correct," Hodge answered. "Take statements. Determine whether or not a crime has been committed. Make an arrest if necessary."
Evelyn glanced at Amanda. They were obviously wondering the same thing. What did this have to do with the lawyer who'd just been in here?
"Do you need directions?"
Hodge asked, though, again, it wasn't really a question.
"I assume you ladies know your way around the city. Should I have one of the squad cars provide you with an escort? Is that how this works?"
"No," Evelyn said. Hodge stared at her until she added, "Sir."
"Dismissed."
He opened a file and began reading it. Amanda looked to Evelyn, who nodded toward the door. They both edged out, not quite sure what had just happened. Roll call was finished. The squad room was empty but for a few stragglers who were waiting for their newly transferred partners to arrive. Vanessa was gone, too, probably with Peterson. She would certainly enjoy the assignment more than Amanda.
"Can we take your car?" Evelyn asked. "I'm in the station wagon today, and it's packed full."
"Sure."
Amanda followed her into the parking lot. Evelyn wasn't lying. Boxes were crammed into every available space in her red Ford Falcon. "Bill's mother moved in down the street this weekend. She's going to help take care of the baby while I'm at work." Amanda climbed into her Plymouth. She didn't want to pry into Evelyn's private life, but the arrangement struck her as odd. "Don't get me wrong," Evelyn said.
settling into the passenger seat.
I love Zeke, and it was great spending the last year and a half with him, but I swear to God, one more day being stuck at home with a kid, and I'd end up swallowing a bucket of Valium.
Amanda had been about to put her key in the ignition, but she stopped. She turned to Evelyn. Most everything she knew about the woman had been filtered through her father. She was beautiful, which Duke Wagner didn't view as an asset for someone in uniform. Opinionated was the word that came up most often, with pushy serving a close second. Amanda asked,
"Your husband was okay with you working again?"
He came around to it. She unzipped her purse and pulled out an Atlanta city map. "Do you know Techwood?"
"No, I've been to Grady Holmes a few times."
Amanda didn't mention that she mostly took calls from North Atlanta, where the victims were white and generally had mothers who offered sweet tea and talked about quickly putting this ordeal behind them.
"How about you?"
"Somewhat. Your dad sent me there a few times." Amanda pumped the gas as she turned the key. The engine caught on the second try. She kept her mouth closed as she backed out of the parking lot. Evelyn had been on patrol for most of her tenure under Duke Wagner. Her plainclothes promotion had been something he didn't agree with, but the winds were shifting by then and he had lost the battle. Amanda could easily see her father sending Evelyn out to the projects to teach her a lesson.
"Let's try to figure this out."
Evelyn unfolded the map and spread it out on her lap. She traced her finger down and across to the area near Georgia Tech. The projects of Techwood were incongruous with the setting of one of the state's top technological universities. But the city was running out of places to house the poor. Clark Howell Homes, University Homes, Bowen Homes, Grady Homes, Perry Homes, Bankhead Courts, Thomasville Heights. They all had long waiting lists, despite the fact that they were effectively slums. Not that any of them had started out that way. In the 1930s, the city had built the Techwood apartment buildings on the site of a former shanty town called Tanyard Bottom. It was the first public housing of its kind in the United States. All the buildings had electricity and running water. There was a school on site, a library and laundry facilities. President Roosevelt had been at the opening ceremonies. It had taken less than 10 years for Techwood to revert back to its original shantytown state. Duke Wagner often said that desegregation was the final nail in Techwood's coffin. No matter what the case, Georgia Tech spent thousands of dollars a year hiring private security to keep students safe from their neighbors. The area was one of the most dangerous in the city.
"Okie dokie."
Evelyn folded the map, saying, "Get us to Techwood Drive and I can tell you where to go from there."
"The buildings don't have numbers."
This was a problem not just limited to the projects. When Amanda was in uniform, the first half hour of most of her calls was wasted searching for the correct address.
"Don't worry," Evelyn said. "I figured out their system."
Amanda made her way up Ponce de Leon Avenue, past old Spiller Field, where the Crackers used to play. The stadium had been torn down to build a shopping mall, but the magnolia tree that had been in center field was still there. She cut through a side alley by the Sears building to get to North Avenue. Both Amanda and Evelyn rolled up their windows as they approached Buttermilk Bottom. The shanties had been torn down a decade ago, but no one had bothered to do anything about the sewage problem. A sour smell filled Amanda's nostrils. She had to breathe through her mouth for the next five blocks. Finally, they were able to roll down the windows again.
"So," Evelyn said, "how's your father's case going?"
This was the second time she'd asked about it, which made Amanda wary.
"He doesn't really talk about it with me."
"That's good news about Oglethorpe, right? Good news for your father?"
"I expect it is."
Amanda stopped at a red light. "What do you think this Techwood 49 has to do with Treadwell showing up?" Amanda had been too flustered before to consider the question, but now she said,
"Perhaps he was reporting a rape on behalf of a client."
"Lawyers in $100 suits don't have clients at Techwood." Evelyn rested her head against her hand. "Treadwell shows up bossing Hodge around. Hodge calls us in and bosses us around. There has to be a connection, don't you think?" Amanda shook her head.
"I have no idea."
"He looked young, right?" He must have just gotten out of school. His daddy's firm really got behind the mayor's election bid.
Maynard Jackson? Amanda asked. She hadn't really thought about white people supporting the city's first black mayor, but then Atlanta's businessmen had never let race get in the way of making money.
Evelyn supplied. Treadwell Price was knee-deep in the campaign. Daddy Treadwell had his picture in the paper with Jackson the day he won. They had their arms around each other like two showgirls. Adam? Alan? She blew out a stream of air. Andrew, that's his name. Andrew Treadwell. Sonny boy must be a junior. I bet they call him Andy.
Amanda shook her head slowly from side to side. She left politics to her father.
Never heard of any of them. Junior was certainly walking around with confidence. Hodge was terrified of him. Pantomime aside, wasn't that a gas?
Yes.
Amanda looked up at the red light, wondering why it was taking so long to change.
Just pull through, Evelyn suggested.
She noticed Amanda's worried expression and said, Relax, I won't arrest you. Amanda checked both ways twice, then a third time, before edging the Plymouth forward.
Watch it, Evelyn warned.
There was a Corvette cresting the hill on Spring Street. Sparks flew from under the engine as it scraped the asphalt and blew through the intersection.
Where's a cop when you need him?
Amanda's calf ached from pounding the brake home.
My car insurance is with Benowitz if you're trying to make your husband some money.
Evelyn laughed.
Benowitz isn't bad once you look past the horns.
Amanda couldn't tell if Evelyn was mocking her or stating her own opinion. She checked the light, still red. She inched forward again, wincing as she pressed the accelerator. Amanda didn't feel her shoulders relax until they had passed the Varsity restaurant, and then they went back up again. The smell engulfed the interior of the car as soon as they had crossed over the four-lane expressway. It wasn't sewage this time, but poverty. And people living stacked on top of one another like animals in crates. The heat was doing no one any favors. Techwood Homes was made of poured concrete with a brick facade, which breathed about as well as Amanda's nylons. Beside her, Evelyn closed her eyes and took a few shallow breaths through her mouth.
Okay, she shook her head, then looked down at the map.
Left on Techwood, right on Pine. Amanda slowed the car to navigate the narrow streets. In the distance, she could see the brick row houses and garden apartments of Techwood Homes. Graffiti marred most surfaces, and where there was no spray paint, there was trash piled waist high. A handful of children were playing in the dirt courtyard. They were dressed in rags. Even from a distance, Amanda could see the sores on their legs. Evelyn directed, "Take a ride up here." Amanda went as far as she could go before the road became impassable. A burned-out car blocked the street. The doors were open, the hood was raised, showing the engine like a charred tongue. Amanda pulled onto a berm and put the gear in park. Evelyn didn't move. She was staring at the children.
I'd forgotten how bad it is.
Amanda stared at the boys. They were all dark-skinned and knobby-kneed. They used their bare feet to kick around a flat-looking basketball. There was no grass here, only dry, red Georgia clay. The kids stopped playing. One of the boys pointed to the Plymouth, which the city bought in lots, and the population easily recognized as an unmarked police car. Another boy ran into the nearest building, dust kicking up behind him. Evelyn huffed a laugh.
And there the little angel goes to alert the welcoming committee.
Amanda popped open the door handle. She could see the Coca-Cola tower in the distance, sandwiching the 14-block slum with Georgia Tech.
My father says Coke's trying to get the city to tear this place down, move them somewhere else.
I can't see the mayor throwing away the people who elected him. Amanda didn't vocally disagree, but in her experience, her father was always right about these things.
Might as well get this over with.
Evelyn pushed open her door and got out of the car. She unzipped her purse and pulled out her radio, which was half as long as a Kel light and almost as heavy. Amanda checked to make sure the zipper on her own bag was closed as Evelyn gave dispatch their location. Amanda's radio seldom worked, no matter how many times she changed the battery. She would have left it at home but for Sergeant Geary. Every morning,
He made all the women dump out their purses so he could make sure they were properly equipped. This way. Evelyn walked up the hill toward the apartment block. Amanda could feel hundreds of sets of eyes tracking their movement. Given the setting, not many people were at work during the day. There was plenty of time to stare out the window and wait for something awful to happen. The farther away they got from the Plymouth, the sicker Amanda felt. So that by the time Evelyn stopped in front of the second building, she felt as if she might be ill. Okay. Evelyn pointed to the doorways, counting off. 3, 4, 5. She mouthed the rest silently as she continued walking. Amanda followed, wondering if Evelyn knew what she was doing or was just trying to show off. Finally, Evelyn stopped again and pointed to the middle unit on the top floor. Here we are. They both stared at the open doorway that led to the stairwell. A single shaft of sunlight illuminated the bottom steps. The windows at the front of the vestibule and on the upper landings were all boarded over, but the metal-encased skylight provided enough light to see by, at least so long as it was daytime. "Fifth floor penthouse," Evelyn said. "How'd you do on the fitness exam?" "Another one of Reggie's new rules. I barely clocked the mile." They were given 8.5 minutes. Amanda had pushed it to the last second. "They gave me a pass on the pull-ups, or I'd be at home right now watching Captain Kangaroo." She gave a cheery smile. "I hope your life doesn't depend on my upper body strength. Surely you can outrun me if it comes to that." Evelyn laughed. "I'm planning on it." She zipped her purse, then buttoned the flap closed. Again, Amanda made sure her purse was closed tightly. The first thing you learned about going into the projects was you never left your bag open and you never put it down anywhere. No one wanted to bring lice or cockroaches home to their families. Evelyn took a deep breath as if she was about to dunk her head underwater, then entered the building. The smell hit them both like a brick to the face. Evelyn covered her nose with her hand as she started up the steps. "You'd think sniffing a baby's diaper all day would accustom me to the smell of urine. I suppose grown men eat different foods. I know asparagus makes mine smell. I tried cocaine once. I can't remember what my pee smelled like, but zowie, did I not care one bit." Amanda stood shocked at the bottom of the stairs, looking up at Evelyn, who seemed not to realize that she'd just admitted to using an illegal narcotic. "Oh, don't pit me out to Reggie. I looked the other way on that red light." Evelyn flashed a smile. She turned the corner on the landing and she was gone. Amanda shook her head as she followed her up the stairs. Neither of them touched the handrails. Cockroaches skittered underfoot. Trash seemed glued to the treads. The walls felt as if they were closing in. Amanda forced herself to breathe through her mouth, just as she forced one foot after the other. This was crazy. Why hadn't they called for backup? Half of the Signal 49s in Atlanta were reported by women who'd been raped in stairwells. They were as ubiquitous to the housing projects as rats and squalor. As Evelyn rounded the next landing, she tugged at the back of her hair. Amanda guessed this was a nervous tic. She shared the anxiety. The higher up they climbed, the more her insides rattled. 14 cops killed in the last 2 years. Gunshots to the head, sometimes to the stomach. One officer had lived for 2 days before finally succumbing. He'd been in so much pain you could hear his screams all the way downstairs in the Grady Hospital ER. Amanda's heart clenched as she rounded the next landing. Her hands started shaking. Her knees wanted to give out. She felt seized by the desire to burst into tears. Surely one of the patrol units had heard Evelyn call in their location to dispatch. The men seldom waited for any female officer to request backup. They just arrived on scene, taking over the case, shooing the women away like they were silly children. Normally, Amanda felt slightly irked by this macho grandstanding. But today, she would have welcomed them with open arms. "This is crazy," she mumbled, rounding the next landing. "Absolutely crazy." "Just a little bit farther," Evelyn happily called back. It wasn't like they were undercover. Everyone knew they were two cops in the building, white cops. Female cops. The hum of televisions and whispered conversations buzzed around. The heat was as stifling as the shadows.
Every closed door represented an opportunity for someone to jump out and hurt one or both of them.
Okay, what have we got? Evelyn asked no one in particular.
443 rapes reported last year. Her voice clattered down the stairs like a bell. 113 were white women. What is that, a 1 in 4 chance of us being raped? She looked back at Amanda.
25%?
Amanda shook her head. The woman might as well be speaking in tongues. Evelyn continued up the stairs.
4 times 113.
Her voice trailed off. I was almost right. We have a 26% chance of being raped today. That's not high at all. That's a 74% chance of nothing happening. The numbers at least made sense. Amanda felt an ounce of pressure lift off her chest.
Well, that doesn't seem so bad.
No, it doesn't. If I had a 74% chance of winning the bug, I'd be down on Auburn right now betting my paycheck. Amanda nodded. The bug was a numbers game run out of Colored Town.
Where did you...
There was a commotion down the hallway. A door slammed. A child screamed. A man's voice shouted for everyone to shut the hell up. The pressure came back like a boulder dropping from the sky. Evelyn had stopped on the stairs. She was looking directly down at Amanda. Statistically, we're fine. More than fine. She waited for Amanda to nod before continuing the climb. Evelyn's posture had lost its certainty. She was breathing heavily. Suddenly, Amanda realized that the other woman had taken the lead. If there was something bad waiting for them at the top of the stairs, Evelyn Mitchell would meet it first. Amanda asked,
"Where did you get those numbers?"
She'd never heard them before and frankly did not care. All she knew was that talking was the only thing keeping her from vomiting.
The reported rapes?
Class project. I'm taking statistics at Tech.
Tech, Amanda repeated. Isn't that hard?
It's a great way to meet men. Again, Amanda didn't know if she was joking.
Again, she didn't care.
How many of the perpetrators were white?
What's that?
Techwood is 90% black. How many of the rapists were...
Oh, right, right.
Evelyn stopped at the top of the stairs.
You know, I can't recall. I'll look it up for you later.
This is it. She pointed down the hallway. All the lights were blown out. The skylight cast everything in shadow. Fourth door on the left.
Do you want my Kel?
I don't think a light will make much difference.
Ready?
Amanda felt her throat work as she tried to swallow. There was an apple core on the floor that seemed to be moving. It was completely covered in ants. Evelyn said,
"Smells not so bad up here."
No, Amanda agreed.
I suppose if you're going to relieve your bladder on the floor, you need not climb 5 flights of stairs to do it.
No, Amanda repeated.
Shall we?
Evelyn walked down the hall with renewed purpose. Amanda caught up with her in front of the closed door. A plastic cutout of the letter C was nailed to the wall. Taped just below the spy hole was a strip of notebook paper with blue capital letters written in a child's hand. Amanda read, "Kitty Treadwell. The plot thickens." Evelyn took a deep breath through her nose.
"You smell that?"
Amanda had to concentrate in order to discern the new odor.
"Vinegar?"
That's what heroin smells like.
Don't tell me you've tried that, too.
Only my hairdresser knows for sure. She motioned for Amanda to stand to the side of the door. Evelyn took the opposite side. This marginally ensured their safety in case someone was standing behind the door with a loaded shotgun. Evelyn raised her hand and knocked on the door with such force that the wood shook on its hinges. Her voice was entirely different, deeper, more masculine when she shouted, "Atlanta Police Department!" She saw Amanda's expression and gave her a wink before banging again. "Open up!" she ordered. Amanda listened to her own heartbeat, the quick gulps of breath. Seconds passed. Evelyn raised her hand again, then dropped it when a muffled woman's voice said,
"Jesus!"
from behind the door. There was a shuffling noise inside the apartment. A chain slid back, then a lock turned. Then another lock. Then the handle moved as the thumb latch was toggled. The girl inside was obviously a prostitute. Though she was dressed in a thin cotton shift, that was more appropriate for a 10-year-old girl. Bleach blonde hair hung to her waist. Her skin was so white, it bordered on blue. Her age was between 20 and 60. Track marks riddled her body, her arms, her neck, her legs, pricking open like wet, red mouths on the veins of her bare feet. Missing teeth gave her face a concave appearance. Amanda could see how the ball and socket joint in her shoulder worked as she folded her arms low on her waist. Evelyn asked, "Kitty Treadwell?" Her voice had a smoker's rasp.
"What you bitches want?"
"Good morning to you, too," Evelyn breezed into the apartment, which looked just as Amanda expected. Molded dishes filled the sink. Empty fast food bags were everywhere. Clothes were strewn across the floor. There was a stained blue couch in the middle of the room with a coffee table in front. Syringes and a spoon rested on a dingy wash rag. Matches, pieces of cigarette filters. A small bag of dirty white powder was laid out beside two cockroaches that were either dead or so high they couldn't move. Someone had pulled the kitchen stove into the middle of the room. The oven door was open, the edge resting on the coffee table to support the large color television set on top. "Is that Dinah?" Evelyn asked. She turned up the volume. Jack Cassidy was singing with Dinah Shore. "I just love her voice. Did you see David Bowie on here last week?" The girl blinked several times. Amanda checked for roaches before turning on the floor lamp. A harsh light filled the room. The windows were covered in yellow construction paper, but that only served to filter the bright morning sun. Perhaps that was why Amanda felt safer inside the apartment than she had in the stairwell. Her heartbeat was returning to normal. She wasn't sweating any more than dictated by the temperature. "David Bowie," Evelyn repeated, turning off the TV. "He was on Dinah last week." Amanda stated the obvious.
She stoned out of her gourd.
A heavy sigh came from deep inside her chest. They had risked their lives for this. Evelyn patted the girl on the cheek. Her palm made a firm slapping sound against the skin. "You in there, sweetheart?"
"I'd soak that hand in Clorox," Amanda advised. "Let's get out of here. If this girl was raped, she probably deserved it."
"Hodge sent us here for a reason."
"He sent you and Vanessa here," Amanda countered. "I can't believe we've wasted our whole morning." "Fonzie," the girl mumbled. "He was talking to Fonzie."
"That's right," Evelyn said, smiling at Amanda as if she'd won a prize. "Bowie was on Dinah last week with Fonzie from Happy Days."
"I seen him."
Kitty ambled over to the couch and collapsed onto the cushions. Amanda didn't know if it was the drugs or her circumstances that made the girl's speech almost unintelligible. She sounded as if someone had turned upside down the entire Flannery O'Connor canon and shaken her out.
"I don't remember what he's saying."
"You know, I don't either." Evelyn motioned for Amanda to check the rest of the place. Amanda asked,
"What am I looking for, back editions of Good Housekeeping?"
Evelyn smiled sweetly. "Wouldn't that be funny if you actually found some?"
"Just hilarious."
Reluctantly, Amanda did as she was asked, trying not to let her arms touch the walls of the narrow hallway as she walked to the back. The apartment was larger than her own. There was a proper bedroom separate from the living area. The door to the closet was off its hinges. Several torn black garbage bags seemed to hold the girl's clothing. The bed was a pile of stained sheets wadded up on the carpet. Impossibly, the bathroom was even more disgusting than the rest of the apartment. Black mold had replaced the grout in the tile. The sink and toilet were serving double duty as ashtrays. The trash can was overflowing with used sanitary napkins and toilet paper. The floor was smeared with something Amanda didn't want to know about. Taking up every available surface were various personal grooming products, which, to Amanda's thinking, was the very definition of irony. 2 cans of Sunsilk hairspray, 4 Breck shampoo bottles at varying levels, a ripped box of Tampax, an empty bottle of Cachet by Prince Machiavelli, two open pots of Pond's cold cream, both caked with a yellowed rind. Enough makeup to stock the Revlon counter at Rich's. Brushes, pencils, liquid eyeliner, mascara, two combs, both clumped with hair. Three very well-used toothbrushes sticking out of a Mayor McCheese drinking glass. The shower curtain was torn from the hooks, giving the cockroaches in the tub a clear view of Amanda. They stared at her intently as she shuddered uncontrollably. She gripped her purse, knowing she was going to have to shake it out before she even thought about putting it in the car. Back in the living room, Evelyn had moved on from Arthur Fonzarelli to the reason for their visit. Andy Treadwell is your cousin or your brother?
Unca,
the girl said, and Amanda assumed she meant the elder Andrew Treadwell.
What time is it?
Amanda looked at her watch.
9 o'clock.
She felt the need to add, in the morning.
Shit.
The girl reached down between the couch cushions and pulled out a pack of cigarettes. Amanda watched as, entranced, the girl studied the pack of Virginia Slims as if they'd just fallen like manna from heaven. Slowly, she took out a cigarette. It was bent at an angle. Still, she grabbed the matches off the table and with shaking hands lit the cigarette. She blew out a stream of smoke. I hear those will kill you, Evelyn said.
I's waiting,
the girl answered. Evelyn countered, there are faster ways.
You stick around, you see how fast.
Amanda detected an edge to the girl's tone. Why is that?
Them kids done seen y'all pull up. My daddy gonna wanna know why two white bitches chat me up.
Evelyn said, I think your Uncle Andy is worried about you.
He want his dick suck again.
Amanda exchanged a look with Evelyn. Most of these girls claimed an uncle or father had abused them. Around the sex crimes units, they called it an edible complex. Not technically correct, but close enough. And obviously a waste of police time. Kitty said,
You can't arrest me. I ain't did nothing.
We don't want to arrest you. Evelyn tried again. We were told by our sergeant that you'd been raped.
It's what I get paid for, ain't it?
She blew out another plume of smoke, this one straight into their faces. Evelyn's sunny disposition faltered. Kitty, we need to speak with you and take a statement.
Ain't my problem.
All right, we'll just leave then. Evelyn snatched the bag of heroin off the coffee table and turned on her heel. If Amanda hadn't been so surprised to see Evelyn take the drugs, she would have been heading toward the door herself. As it was, she saw everything. The shock on the girl's face, the way she sprang from the couch, fingers out like the claws on a cat. Seemingly of its own volition, Amanda's foot rose up. She didn't trip the girl. She kicked her in the ribs, sending her straight into the stove. The blow was hard. Kitty slammed into the television, breaking off the stove door. The TV cracked against the floor, tubes popped, glass shattered. Evelyn stared at Amanda in visible shock. What was that?
She was about to jump you.
You certainly stopped her. Evelyn knelt down on the floor. She took a handkerchief out of her purse and handed it to the girl.
Bitches,
Kitty slurred. Her fingers went to her mouth. She pulled out one of her last remaining teeth.
Goddamn bitches.
Evelyn stood back up, probably thinking it wasn't wise to kneel in front of an angry prostitute. Still, she said, You need to tell us what's going on. We're here to help you.
Fuck you,
the girl mumbled, fingers feeling around inside her mouth. Amanda saw old scars across her wrist where Kitty had tried to slice open the veins.
Get the fuck out of here.
Evelyn's voice turned hard. Don't make us drag you to the station, Kitty. I don't care who your uncle is. Amanda thought of her car, the time it would take to wash away the grime from the back seat. She told Evelyn, You can't seriously be considering. Like hell I'm not. There's no way I'm letting this.
Shut up,
the girl yelled.
I ain't even Kitty, I's Jane. Jane Del Rey.
Oh, for the love of, Amanda threw her hands into the air. All the terror she'd experienced on the stairwell turned into anger.
We don't even have the right girl.
Hodge didn't give a name, just an address. Amanda shook her head.
I don't know why we even listened to him. He's been here less than a day, the same as you, I might add.
I was in uniform for 3 years before...
Why are you back? Amanda demanded. Are you here to do the job or is it something else?
You're the one who wants to hightail it out of here.
Because this whore can't tell us anything.
Hey!
Jane screamed. Who you calling a whore?
Evelyn looked down at the girl. Sarcasm dripped from her voice. Really, darling? You want to make that argument now? Jane wiped the blood from her mouth.
Y'all ain't from the government.
Brilliant deduction, Evelyn said. Exactly who from the government is looking for you? Her shoulders gave a slight shrug.
I might have been down to the five on account of needing some money.
Evelyn put her hand to her head. The five referred to the Five Point Station bus line that serviced the welfare office. You were trying to cash Kitty's government assistance voucher. Amanda asked,
Isn't it mailed?
They both stared openly at Amanda. Evelyn explained, The post office boxes here aren't exactly secure. Jane said,
Kitty don't need it. She ain't never needed. She rich, got a family that's connected. That's why you bitches here, ain't it?
Evelyn asked, Where is she now?
She'd be gone 6 months.
Where did she go?
Disappeared. Same with Lucy, same with Mary. All them just up and disappeared.
These are working girls? Evelyn asked. Lucy and Mary? The girl nodded. Is Kitty on the game, too? Again, the girl nodded. Amanda had had quite enough of this.
Should I write this down for the newspaper? Three prostitutes are missing. Stop the presses.
Ain't missing, the girl insisted. They gone. Real gone. Disappeared.
She wiped blood from her lips.
They's all living here. They stuff's here. They's putting down roots. They's cashing their vouchers from the five.
Amanda said,
Until you tried to get their vouchers instead.
You ain't listening to me, Jane insisted. They all gone. Lucy been gone a year. She here 1 minute, then,
she snapped her fingers.
Poof.
Evelyn turned to Amanda and in a deadly serious tone said, We need to put out an immediate APB on a man wearing a cape and a magician's hat. She stopped. Hold that. Let's check to see if Doug Henning's in town. Amanda couldn't help herself. She laughed at the joke. They all jumped when the front door slammed open. Wood splintered, the knob dug into the wall, plaster shattered, the air seemed to shake. A well-built black man stood in the doorway. He was out of breath, probably from running up the stairs. His thick sideburns grew into a goatee and mustache that circled his mouth. His pants and shirt were a matching lime green. He was obviously a pimp. And clearly furious.
What you honky bitches doing here?
Amanda could not move. She felt as if her body had turned to stone. We were looking for Kitty, Evelyn answered. Do you know Kitty Treadwell? Her uncle is a very good friend of Mayor Jackson's. Her throat worked as she swallowed. That's why we're here. They asked us to come, the mayor's friend. They're very concerned that Kitty is missing. The man ignored her, grabbing Jane up by her hair. She screamed in pain, her fingers digging into his hands as she tried to keep her scalp from ripping.
You been talking to the police, gal?
Ain't say nothing, honest.
Jane could barely speak from terror. They just show up. He shoved her out into the hall. Jane stumbled, falling against the wall before she found her footing. We're leaving now. Evelyn's voice was shaking. She edged toward the door, motioning Amanda to follow. We don't want trouble. The man shut the door. The sound was like a gunshot. He stared at Amanda for a few intent seconds. Then Evelyn. His eyes looked as if they were on fire. Evelyn said, Our sergeant knows we're here. He turned around and slowly slid the chain into the track. And then he locked the deadbolt. And then... the next one.
We talked to dispatch before we...
I hear you, Mrs. Pig. Let's see, can the mayor get here before I'm through?
He took the key from the lock and slid it into his front pocket. His voice went into a deep baritone.
You a fine-looking woman, you know that?
He wasn't talking to Evelyn. His eyes were trained on Amanda. He licked his lips, his gaze lingering on her chest. She tried to back up, but he followed. Her legs hit the arm of the couch, his fingers touched the side of her neck.
Damn, gal, so fine.
Amanda fought a wave of dizziness. She reached down to her purse, fidgeting with the zip, trying to get it to open.
Call for backup.
Evelyn already had her radio in her hand. She clicked the button. The man's hand circled Amanda's neck, his thumb pressed under her chin.
Radio ain't gonna work up here. We too high for the antennas.
Evelyn furiously clicked the button. There was only static.
Shit.
We gonna have some fun, ain't we, Fuzzy?
His hand tightened around Amanda's throat. She could smell his cologne and sweat. There was a birthmark on his cheek. A patch of hair showed where his shirt was unbuttoned. Gold chains. A tattoo of Jesus with a crown of thorns.
Ev,
Amanda breathed. She could feel the outline of the revolver inside her purse. She tried to force her finger into the trigger guard.
Mm-hmm,
the pimp moaned. He unzipped his pants.
Fine-looking woman.
Ev,
Amanda stuttered. His hand slipped under her skirt. She could feel his fingernail scrape her bare flesh, the pressure of him against her thigh. Evelyn jammed the radio back into her purse and zipped closed the bag as if she was preparing to leave. Amanda panicked, and then gasped as Evelyn gripped the straps with both hands, swung around, and smashed her bag into the side of the man's head. Gun, badge, handcuffs, Kel light, radio, nightstick, nearly 20 pounds of equipment. The pimp collapsed to the floor like a rag doll, blood spurted from the side of his head. There were deep cuts across his cheek where the Indian tassels had sliced open the skin. Amanda grabbed her revolver out of her purse. The bag fell to the floor. Her hands shook as she tried to grip the gun. She had to lean against the arm of the couch so she wouldn't fall down.
Christ!
Evelyn stood over the man, mouth agape. The blood was really flowing now.
My God,
Amanda whispered. She pushed down her skirt. Her pantyhose were ripped from his prying fingernails. She could still feel his hand on her throat.
My God.
Are you okay? Evelyn asked. She put her hands on Amanda's arms.
You're okay, all right?
Slowly, she reached down for Amanda's revolver.
I've got this, okay? You're fine.
Your gun.
Amanda was panting so hard she was going to hyperventilate.
Why didn't you shoot him?
Evelyn chewed her bottom lip. She stared at Amanda for what seemed like a full minute before finally admitting.
Bill and I agreed that we shouldn't keep a loaded gun in the house because of the baby.
Words clogged Amanda's throat. She screamed.
Your gun isn't loaded?
Well, Amanda dug her fingers into the back of her hair.
It worked out, right?
She let out a strained laugh.
Sure, it worked out. We're both fine. We're both just fine.
She looked down at the pimp again. His pants were splayed open.
I guess it's not true what they say about...
He was going to rape me. He was going to rape both of us.
Statistically...
Evelyn's voice trailed off before she admitted.
Well, yes. It was bound to happen. I didn't want to tell you before, but...
She picked up Amanda's purse from the floor.
Yeah.
For the first time in 2 months, Amanda wasn't hot anymore. Her blood had turned cold. Evelyn kept babbling. She zipped Amanda's gun inside her purse, looped the strap over her shoulder.
We're both okay, though, right? I'm okay. You're okay. We're all okay.
She spotted a telephone on the floor by the couch. Her hand was shaking so hard that she dropped the receiver. It rattled in the cradle, dinging the bell. She finally managed to pick up the phone and put it to her ear.
I'll call this in. The boys will come running. We'll get out of here. We're both fine, all right?
Amanda blinked sweat out of her eye. Evelyn stuck her finger in the dial.
I'm sorry, I talk when I get nervous. It drives my husband crazy.
The rotary slid back and forth.
What about those missing girls the whore mentioned? Do you recognize any of their names?
Amanda blinked away more sweat. Her mind flashed up strange images. The disgusting bathroom, the shampoo bottles, the piles of makeup. Evelyn said,
Lucy, Mary, Kitty Treadwell,